Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, an update on the Iraq War resolution pending before the Urbana City Council, a report from the anti-war teach-in and walkout held on the University of Illinois campus on Wednesday, and segments of speeches given at a panel discussion on conscientious objection to war. But first, these headlines.
The Guardian reports that an Israeli military intelligence officer was court-martialed for deliberately withholding information from his superiors. The officer, whose identity has not been released, refused to provide intelligence on how many people would be in a certain building at the time of a planned attack, because he believed the intelligence would be used to carry out a raid which would have harmed innocent civilians. His refusal caused the attack to be called off. During his court-martial hearing, he argued that since the planned military action would have been illegal, in that it would have deliberately targeted civilians, he was under no obligation to participate. The court disagreed, but gave him a relatively light sentence of ejection from intelligence service and demotion to a low-level military job. In addition, the Israeli military's highest-ranking law officer has begun an investigation into whether the planned military action was legal or not.
The following headline was contributed to the IMC Newswire. Organizers counted 120 activists holding signs and shivering for peace Saturday afternoon at the weekly Prospect for Peace observance north of I-74 in Champaign. The observance at Prospect and Market View Streets has been a weekly event for almost a year. More than 80 people attended last week and the week before. Today's demonstrators included parents with children, high school and college students, senior citizens, and even a dog. Despite temperatures in the 30s and a chilly wind, participants were cheered by favorable responses from the vast majority of motorists traversing the city's busiest intersection.
IndyMedia.org reports that police departments in London, New York, and Budapest have limited the options of anti-war activists for the upcoming International Day of Protest Against War in Iraq. While they will allow some kind of action on February 15th, each city's police department has placed limitations on when and where free speech may be exercised. New York police have refused to grant a permit for a march and are only allowing a rally. London police will allow a march but not a rally, and Budapest police do not seem to be allowing any action at all. In each case, police officials cite concerns for safety and the disruption of traffic and business. Activists have declared that they will hold their protests as planned and that they do not recognize the police's authority to arbitrarily limit public speech.
This headline was also reported on IndyMedia.org. Police violently attacked protesters and bystanders on the last day of the World Social Forum in Brazil. It started when a Mapuche woman who was attending the World Socialist Forum and staying at the International Youth Camp was arrested with charges of, quote, obscene acts, end quote, for bathing nude in a river. Activists saw this and organized over 400 people to protest by nonviolently taking their clothes off in solidarity. When the news protest left the youth camp to march downtown, the police attacked. After injuring and arresting some of the nude protesters, the police lashed out at journalists and bystanders. An unknown number of people were hospitalized or arrested as a result of the police assault. That wraps up the headlines. Thanks to Kevin for coordinating them, reading them, and for making a last-minute valiant trip to the IMC to pick up my script for today's show, which was left on the printer. The Urbana City Council met last week to consider a resolution of opposition to the proposed U.S. war against Iraq. A large group of concerned citizens gathered to voice support for the resolution, and the council will meet again tonight for a final vote. Zach Miller has the story.
On Monday, January 17th, citizens from every direction converged on the Urbana City Council chambers to express their opinions on a proposed resolution condemning the war in Iraq. The resolution was brought forward by Urbana City Council member Danielle Chenoweth.
Whereas the ultimate security of the residents of Urbana and the United States at large, is dependent upon working cooperatively with all nations to eliminate poverty, injustice, inequality, environmental degradation, and other factors that breed war and terrorism. Whereas the Congressional Budget Office estimates a military action against Iraq will cost our nation between $9 and $13 billion a month, resulting in further cuts in federally funded projects and programs that benefit our city and its residents. Whereas the costs of war and the accompanying ballooning deficits could have significant impact on the residents of the state of Illinois, which is facing the fourth worst budget crisis in the country. The school districts of the state, 90% of which face budget crises this year, and the city of Urbana, which predicts revenue loss this year. Whereas the billions of dollars to be spent on this war could much better be spent on schools, nutrition, health care, housing, infrastructure improvements, and generally eliminate poverty. Whereas there is growing opposition to war against Iraq, given that 42 cities to date have enacted anti-war resolutions, an estimated 250,000 rallied in Washington, D.C. recently to prevent war, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, World Council of Churches, the NAACP, and numerous unions oppose the war, and local peace demonstrations have averaged once a week for over a year. Now, therefore, be it resolved that we, the members of City Council of the City of Urbana, oppose a U.S. invasion of Iraq, and be it further resolved that we urge the United States to work through the United Nations to disarm Iraq and reaffirm our nation's commitment to the rule of law in all international relationships, and be it further resolved that we call upon the government of the United States to make every effort to end the United Nations sanctions against Iraq, and be it further resolved that we urge the U.S. to help alleviate the budget crises faced by the majority of the states and to increase federal funding to states, school districts, and municipalities.
Over 100 Urbana residents were present for the public input and debate. Some speakers brought lists of names from organizations that they represented. By the end of the night, over 400 names had been entered into the public record supporting the resolution condemning the war in Iraq. Urbana is among over 100 cities nationwide with campaigns to pass similar resolutions at the local level. Carol Inskeep read some of the names of these cities.
Boulder, Colorado, New Haven, Connecticut, Gainesville and St. Petersburg, Florida, Honolulu, Hawaii, Chicago, Evanston, Moline, all in Illinois. Helena, Montana has passed a resolution. Jersey City, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Ithaca, New York.
Dozens of residents spoke in support of the resolution on personal, economic, and moral grounds. Two Iraqi residents of Urbana supported the resolution. One of them was Najla Al-Kaizi.
I have a mother. She's 70 years old. She's there in Baghdad, and she's hopeless, and she doesn't know what time that a missile or a bomb going to hit her.
Matt Reichel of Student Peace Action spoke of the unique economic impact of the University of Illinois on the city of Urbana.
The largest employer in Urbana is the University of Illinois. So the misplaced priorities that this war threatens to bring to the fore directly affects citizens of Urbana, more so than most towns in the country.
Representatives of the anti-war, anti-racism effort, Progressive Resource Action Cooperative, Illinois Disciples Foundation, and Urbana High School Students for World Improvement also spoke. Speakers pointed out the economic costs on the city, the cost of death and ill health on those who fight in the war, and the psychological cost of living in wartime. Four residents registered their opposition to the resolution. Two of them spoke. Brenda Kamen, a veteran of the 1991 Gulf War, spoke in support of armed conflict abroad and suggested that Urbana needed to be more financially independent.
I think you have better ways to spend taxpayers' money than to waste our money by some resolution instead of worrying about federal funds, state funds. If you had more economic means in this city, you wouldn't have to depend so much on federal and state aid.
After 2.5 hours of public input, the resolution was read and council members made their comments. Council members Esther Pat, Ruth Wyman, and Danielle Shenowith all spoke in support of the resolution. Wyman read extensively from the city budget to point out the number of federal funding sources that would be hurt by war. Pat spoke of the impacts to daily quality of life that war would have.
It matters like this maybe more than anything else. I feel I am so small and it is so big, and what can we do? I think that's the way many people feel, which is why they are going to everyone who represents them in government, including us, and ask that we lend our voice.
Councilmember Milton Otto and Mayor Todd Satterthwaite both supported the contents of the resolution.
I'm a Mennonite, and we believe that war is in every instance wrong, in every instance immoral. Not merely wars that are preemptive wars, but even wars in self-defense. I believe that this war is particularly immoral.
This kind of a resolution puts me in kind of an uncomfortable position. On the one hand, I support virtually every word of the resolution.
However, each of them had concerns about jurisdiction.
You're elected to go vote on streets and sewers, and you're trying to put my hometown, as you know, on record as supporting or opposing this issue.
But I am concerned about the capacity that we have as local government to act as an advisory body to the federal government.
Otto also took issue with one specific section of the resolution.
I disagree with this resolution in one respect. I think the sanctions are appropriate.
Otto surprised several members of the audience when he used the floor to suggest that Ralph Nader voters in Florida were responsible for any war in Iraq. At the end of his speech, Milton encouraged everyone in attendance to attend the weekly peace rally on Prospect Avenue on Sundays, pledging to do so himself. Councilmember Jim Hayes, a Vietnam veteran who spoke about the mistake of U.S. involvement in that war, had only one concern about the resolution.
Wars are dangerous and people get killed, and I would have felt much better if the resolution stated that they were against the United States initiating any war instead of just saying Iraq.
Hayes also used the floor to challenge activists present to use their energies to confront issues of racism in drug sentencing as well as other issues facing the community on a daily basis. Councilmember Joe Whalen was not present for the meeting, though he was scheduled to chair it. Councilmember Laura Huth supported the resolution, though she did not speak. In the end, 5 of the 6 council members present voted in favor of the resolution. Milton Otto was the only council member to vote against it. The vote last Monday was only a committee vote. In order to be passed as an official resolution of the City Council, members will have to vote again on the issue at the meeting this Monday, February 3rd. Members of the public may participate in public comment starting at 7 p.m. at 400 South Vine Street. For ongoing coverage of this story, visit ucimc.org. From the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, I'm Zach Miller reporting for the IMC NewsHour.
So now we see the stars and stripes on every porch and store, and they want to ship your teenage kid off to some foreign shore. As they rally hard for unity and bang the drum for war, can the union speak out strong, saying solidarity forever means workers killing workers never. Solidarity forever, tell them war is always wrong.
Last Wednesday, students at the University of Illinois were given the chance to walk out in protest of war and to join their classmates in educating themselves about the issues surrounding the proposed war in Iraq. Several IMC reporters gathered audio from this event, and Kevin Heinrich has the story.
On Wednesday, January 29th, Student Peace Action at the University of Illinois sponsored an anti-war walkout. They encouraged students and professors to skip their classes and attend a number of planned events, including a rally on the quad at noon, as well as a number of lectures. Several professors in Lincoln Hall opened their classes to the public and spoke on subjects relating to war and social justice. The Independent Media Center was on the scene, and we have some excerpts for you from a couple of the day's many exciting discussions. First, we have some comments from a panel discussion on the current anti-war movement's relation to past anti-war movements, including opposition to the war in Vietnam. University of Illinois Professor James Barrett, from the History Department, pointed out some of the advantages the current anti-war activists have over their Vietnam-era counterparts.
One big difference, in fact, from the early movement against the Vietnam War and what's happening today is that there's already massive opposition to this war. The people of the United States don't really support the war, and that certainly was not true in the early stages of the war. Vietnam was strongly supported by most citizens in the United States.
Also from the History Department, Professor Mark Leff had some observations on how an anti-war movement can be valuable even if it doesn't succeed in preventing a war.
What is the role, then, of the anti-war movement in the Vietnam War, and what does that suggest that could be of use to us? And I think, to me, what it suggests is that the kind of impact that you have can sometimes be persuasion, and that may be the way that we need to go now, given the large portion of the American public that is already skeptical about the direction in which we're moving. But there are other ways in which an anti-war movement makes a difference. And one of them is whether or not people like exactly what it is that you're saying or who you are, that the world know that certain things cannot happen without them being noticed, without attention being directed toward them.
Professor Leff also discussed the importance of paying attention to who wields disproportionate power in the United States.
I heard a wonderful statement by someone about if we did have a draft, and if the draft were made up entirely of the children of parents who earned at least $150,000 a year, the suggestion was that if that were the case, that we had a draft for children of parents with over $150,000 a year, that North Korea and Iraq could set up a weapons of mass destruction or US store, and we still wouldn't do anything. I mean, it does matter who has power in American society. But that only puts the responsibility all the more in us. Sometimes it's harder to make those connections. It isn't necessarily individually us who are being challenged. But one of the things that we're supposed to do in a university is question the world and try to understand, question, and then act upon the world around us.
And then physics professor Mike Weissman concluded the discussion with some advice for continuing anti-war activism.
If we can't stop the war, we're going to have to be thinking about a long-term strategy against the Bush doctrine, which is essentially a doctrine of making the sort of low-key imperialism that you're going to always have with a giant power into a particularly virulent, aggressive, reckless imperialism of the type that's cruising for a disaster. And so we should already be thinking ahead a little bit to making our arguments in a way that builds us credibility and builds a serious role in the fairly grim world that we're going to have for many years now.
Later in the afternoon, law professor Francis Boyle discussed the past, current, and possible future wars in Iraq. He outlined a 5-article bill of impeachment against President Bush, which he is attempting to have introduced into the House of Representatives. He discussed the nature of the Bush Doctrine, and he emphasized that war is not inevitable, and that the people of the United States can still act to prevent military action. Professor Boyle discussed the evils of war as applied to the first Gulf War and Bush's plan for a second action. He cited the observations of Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson, who, after World War II, took a leave of absence to act as a prosecutor against Nazi war criminals in the Nuremberg trials.
That was the essence of this Nuremberg charge of a crime against peace. Indeed, Mr. Justice Jackson said that of the three Nuremberg crimes, a crime against peace, war crimes, and a crime against humanity, the crime against peace was the worst because it entailed within itself all the other crimes, launching an aggressive war or a war in violation of international treaties and agreements. Indeed, as we've seen this fall, the leaked United Nations report indicating that the UN estimates there will be at least 500,000 casualties from the planned Bush war against Iraq. I think that is a gross underestimate. Our best estimates from the Bush senior war against Iraq, just the war itself, we're not talking about the sanctions, were that it killed approximately 200,000 people, 100,000 soldiers, 100,000 civilians. And of the 100,000 soldiers, many of them were out of combat and therefore not legitimate targets of attack. And of course, the same true for most of the civilians. In this war, it is clear they are going to attack the Iraqi cities. They've made that very clear, apparently starting with some massive cruise missile bombardment of the Iraqi cities. Baghdad, a metropolitan area of 5 million people, Basra, Tikrit, and many others. So we can expect extraordinary civilian casualties, far more than anything we found in the last Gulf War.
And this is Kevin Heinrich for the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center.
Marching, marching.
Now's your chance to eat bread and support independent media. The IMC has been selected as a participant in the Baker of the Day contest, sponsored by Great Harvest Bread Company, 2149 South Neal in Champaign. Several nonprofit organizations will be voted on by customers and the public between February 1st and 14th. The organization with the most votes has the opportunity to spend a day making bread and keeping all the profits from the bread sold that day. If the UCIMC is selected, the proceeds will go into our capital campaign fund, which will be used to ensure the IMC a permanent space in the community. No purchase is necessary to vote. Voters must be 18 years of age. Votes must be submitted in person with only one vote per customer per visit. Eat, drink, and help the IMC become a permanent place to make news in your community.
But a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses, bread and roses.
Over 50 people gathered yesterday afternoon at the Champaign Public Library to attend a panel discussion on conscientious objection to war. The purpose of the event was to make accessible to young people information on conscientious objection as one path for resisting involvement in a war. The speakers, including a CO from World War II and one from the war in Vietnam, shared their personal experiences as objectors, discussed the role of war resistors throughout history, gave resources for investigating the process of becoming a CO, and answered questions from the audience. They urged young people who are opposed to a war to speak out against it and cautioned them to prepare for becoming a CO before they would be called to serve. Keynote speaker Mary Lee Sargent spoke on the importance of understanding the history of refusing to participate in war.
Some people know intuitively that war is wrong. They understand without having to be convinced by facts and rational arguments, without possessing a deep knowledge of politics, history, economics, and foreign affairs. They just get it. Sometimes they're born getting it, sometimes they get it intuitively later on. They get that nonviolent means are the best, the sanest, the most enduring and humane way to create justice and equality, to bring about social change that is lasting and beneficial to human beings, the only way to do no harm. Others come to the same realization through faith, in their religious and spiritual traditions. They absorb from these teachings that peace and nonviolence are the best way to live and to create a lasting social change. Others of us who are more skeptical, more doubting, less intuitive perhaps, learn it by studying history and economics and foreign affairs and government and politics. We acquire through the study of factual information, a political analysis, which shows us that war is wrong, always leads to disaster, never brings peace and security in the long run. As a teacher and student of history for most of my life, I believe that knowing history helps those of us who may not know it intuitively, who may not get it spiritually. We get it by our study. Therefore, history is very valuable to convince some of us. Even those of you who get it intuitively and spiritually, though, can benefit by knowing history, because you have to convince others. You have to persuade other people. And sometimes just your saying, "I know in my heart, you know, I know from God, Goddess, that this is not right," that's not enough. You've got to know history.
Joe Miller, one of the national coordinators for Vietnam Veterans Against the War, spoke on the need to support those of the armed services who may be objecting to the current conflict.
But the resistors in the Gulf War last time around are people that tend to disappear from history. And we need to remind young people today, remind ourselves, there may be resistors in this conflict that we have to pay attention to. They're in uniform. it's tough to be a conscientious objector after you've put on the uniform. And there are ways of helping them kind of deal with this. The main way is part of what everybody's been talking about here, is to make noise about it. Don't let their cases just kind of fizzle. You know, talk about them, you know, and stuff like that. Right now, we don't know of anybody, but we should keep our eyes and ears open. Whenever you hear about anybody in the military who's thinking about not cooperating, pay attention to their case, try to help them find legal assistance, try to make their case public so they don't get lost in the shuffle. There's a tendency for people, that, unfortunately, to say, well, they signed the contract, they put the uniform on, they knew what they were getting into. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. At 18, I didn't know what I was getting into. At 19 or 20, who knows?
This story was written by Sevilla Mann with audio from Jim Buell. For IMC Radio News, I'm Clint Popetz.
If today was not a crooked highway, if tonight was not a crooked trail, if tomorrow wasn't such a long time, then lonesome would mean nothing to you at all.
That wraps up this edition of the IMC Radio News. Contributors to the show included Kevin Heinrich, Paul King, Zach Miller, Sevilla Mann, Jim Buell, Nancy Dietrich, and myself, Clint Popetz. Special thanks to the City of Urbana for providing the recordings of the City Council sessions to the Urbana Free Library. This show is yours, and you should make use of it. You can learn how to make news that states your views by attending a radio news production class starting in 30 minutes at the Illinois Independent Media Center, 218 West Main Street in downtown Urbana. No experience is necessary, and the class continues every Monday in February from 6:30 to 8 p.m. You can also stop by the radio news group meetings at 6:30 on Thursday. Ideas and stories can be emailed to newsroom@ucimc.org, or you can call 344-8820. You can visit us on the web at www.ucimc.org. Take care and join us next week for another edition of the IMC Radio News.
And if I could only hear her heart a softer pounding, yes, and only if she was lying by me, I'd lie in my bed once again. There's beauty in that silver singing river. There's beauty in that rainbow in the sky. But none of these and nothing else can touch the beauty that I remember in my true love's eyes. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, if I could only hear a heart softly pounding, yes, and only if she was lying by me, and I'd lie in my bed once again.